Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophonous cavalcade of conversation. Tonight, we stand on the edge of the official beginning of winter, a cold and dark time, but especially this year. So if you're going to be huddled at home, doing your Christmas shopping by computer, preparing for somewhat muted holidays, the least we can do is give you something cool to listen to, and tonight's program should meet and exceed that standard. You know, it's hard to go a day these days without some kind of UFO-related news story popping up in media somewhere around the world. A classified photo snapped by a Navy pilot, for example. Controversial claims made by an Israeli space scientist. Efforts to finally approve a budget for the Pentagon's UAP task force. There's one common denominator to all of these stories, and it's Lou Elizondo. When he left his job as a career intelligence officer with the Department of Defense back in 2017, and then 2 days later showed up on a stage with rock star Tom DeLonge to announce the creation of To the Stars Academy, and then 2 months later helped the New York Times put together this blockbuster front-page story about a secret Pentagon UFO study, this subject was changed forever. And it's not going to be easy for anyone to put the genie back into the bottle. Now that the taboo has been kind of smashed into pieces, other people are coming forward. Investigations are underway. Congress is asking questions. Media is covering it. And there is more news on the horizon. In just a few minutes, Lou Elizondo returns to talk to us about current events, what comes next, the search for evidence, metamaterials, the future of TTSA, and a lot more. Can't ask for a better guest at a better time. And as I told Lou about an hour ago, let's make some waves. In the second half tonight, another of my favorite guests, an intrepid researcher and writer who truly owns the niche of investigating UFOs, UAPs, weird phenomena, secret programs from behind what we used to call the Iron Curtain, the former USSR, Eurasia, the Baltic countries, the Far East. Paul Stonehill is a terrific storyteller and investigator. He's co-authored a new book about USOs, unidentified submerged objects, a.k.a. underwater UFOs, a topic made all the more interesting and relevant by revelations made here in the U.S. with help from Lou Elizondo, unidentified objects detected underwater in and around engaging with our naval units and pilots. The same things have been happening for a long time in Russia and have been investigated by their military and their scientists, although we don't get to hear much of that. Well, Paul has collected piles of information. In addition, his YouTube channel reports on all sorts of other kinds of mysteries. The Dyatlov Pass mystery, those mysterious deaths, for instance. The ghost village of the Urals, where the residents of an entire town vanished. The search for the enduring mystery, mystical, magical land of Shambhala. The Buddhists have long believed the paradise of peace and wisdom exists in Tibet, but maybe there's another one in Siberia. That story and a lot more coming up with Paul Stonehill in the second half tonight. Normally, at this point of the program, I would mention Knapp's News on the Coast to Coast website and all the various stories webmaster Lex and I have pulled together. Take my word for it. We have some cool articles and links that I think you will devour. You can find them on the Coast to Coast website, but I'm not going to go into detail because I want to use this time to try and squeeze Lou for as much as we can. Check out the website and Knapp's News when you get a moment, as well as how to become a Coast Insider. A subscription costs about 15 cents a day. If you subscribe for a year, gives you access to hundreds of great programs and interviews, including the Art Bell Vault. You can also subscribe to George Norrie's television program, Beyond Belief, covers a lot of the same subject matter as George's radio program. It, too, is a great deal. With that, let's assume the position. Bring in the dog and the cat and the chicken and the chupacabra. Put on a pot of Joe. Slide your bod into those soft flannel jammies and your toes into the winter bunny slippers. Throw a log on the fire. Plop yourself down in a comfy spot. Turn down the lights and turn up the radio because we're about ready to rumble. In a moment, Lou Elizondo. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Lou Elizondo is a career intelligence officer whose experience includes working for the U.S. Army, the Department of Defense, the National Counterintelligence Executive, the Director of National Intelligence. He was a special agent in charge of and supervised highly sensitive espionage and terrorism investigations around the world, anti-cartel, anti-terror, anti-drug. I have seen a list of the things that he oversaw that has not been made public, and can tell you he was directly involved in overseeing highly sensitive stuff, including something called ATIP. Now, we had never heard of that before. The New York Times broke it open in December of 2017, 3 years ago this week. And when that news broke, it changed everything for the study of UFOs. That formerly secret study known as ATIP was part of something that started out called OSAP. Lou Elizondo left that position because of frustrations over how the subject was being handled. He didn't think it was being taken seriously enough, and we've all got a chance to learn about his career and his efforts to investigate this very strange topic. Can't thank you enough, Lou, for coming back to the program.
Well, George, as always, thank you very much for having me, and also a very special thanks to your listeners and the audience out there who decided to stay up extra late and listen to this conversation. Thanks for having me.
I want to start with something fun, because since you were here the last time, you made a fateful decision to enter the strange world of social media. And when I saw that you had signed up for Twitter, I thought he's lost it. He's lost his senses. He's out of his mind, because I mean, it is a world fraught with peril. Am I wrong?
Actually, you and me both. It was with great angst I decided to have a social media account. As you know, George, I tend to be a creature of the shadows, partly because of my previous profession and, of course, because of my training. And, you know, let's face it, you know, when you put yourself out in a public forum like social media, you really are opening yourself up to a whole lot of things, and some of it's positive, and frankly, some of it's quite negative, and there's a lot of criticism out there. And, you know, social media is one of those things that, although kind of new, I guess, to folks like me, I do think it plays an important role. And I'll tell you, one of the most probably endearing aspects of social media has been this incredible outpouring of what we call UFO Twitter. You know, this is an enclave, if you will, of individuals who are very interested in the topic, and frankly, most take the topic very, very seriously and have dedicated a lot of their personal, in some cases, professional time to the study of UAPs. So yeah, I mean, it's a bit terrifying, but at the same time, satisfying. So I guess maybe like a first date, if you will.
I was imagining in my head the conversation that you must have had with your wife when you were telling her you're going to do this. I can imagine the kind of feedback you got.
That conversation went over like a lead balloon. No one in my family, other than my two daughters, really have social media. And I really had to rely on my daughters, and still do, actually, for a lot of their help. You know, social media has a lot of different buttons, if you will, and different things that you can do on it. And, you know, I'm always just one. First of all, for the record, I got really fat fingers. I got fingers like a sausage, you know. They're not very delicate. You know, it's really easy to press the wrong button, you know. So if you want to put like a smiley face and all of a sudden I press the wrong button and next thing you know, I'm transmitting out to the world, you know, probably some sort of obscenity. So I have to be very careful, and I'm constantly seeking guidance from people that are far more savvy than I am in social media.
So on UFO Twitter, you're engaging with people who, before you were on that site, would bash you pretty much hour by hour every day. And they would do it based on snarky little things that would slip out of your former employers at the Pentagon. Could you explain or give us a general sense of what your life is like now? I mean, it was tumultuous when you came out and surprised your employers showing up on that stage with Tom DeLonge and Hal and Chris Mellon. They were shocked, and there was a lot of pushback for you. There were repercussions for you that you didn't really describe in detail in public, but have things settled down? You know, the Pentagon has put out a variety of different stories about you, what your role was. ATIP had nothing to do with UFOs, they said. Lou Elizondo didn't work for it anyway. Has that all been straightened out, or are you still catching flack?
Well, I mean, boy, that's let me unpackage that a little bit. First of all, you're right. I received a tremendous amount of backlash from a lot of people, and not just from the Pentagon and people inside the Pentagon, but people out in the general public. And you're right. Social media has given me an ability to engage those individuals. I firmly believe the truth has nothing to fear. So I think the best way to handle quote unquote haters is to address their concerns. Why not? I mean, if they have genuine concerns and genuine questions, then you know, let's talk about it. Let's see if we can address some of those concerns or questions that they may have. Because I think friends are certainly better than allies. I think friends are better than enemies. I think allies are better than having people out there that, you know, frankly, I think have probably honest and good questions, but they don't have a good answer. And so naturally, when you have somebody that's got these outlandish claims about, in this case, UFOs, you know, as my friend Chris Mellon says, you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. So let's provide the evidence. Now, back to your second part of that, as far as the amount of opposition I was facing within the Pentagon and the U.S. government, there are still pockets that exist, but I will tell you it's not near to the level as it was just 2 years ago. It's annoying because at this point, I think most people recognize the truth and what my role is, and that ATIP, you know, was really a program about UFOs. You have statements for the record by senators, in fact, and other senior members of the U.S. government who were there when I was giving these briefings to senior DOD personnel. So I'm not sure that's really in question anymore. I think for me, the most disappointing part is that those pockets of resistance inside the Pentagon that still try to hold on to the old narratives about ATIP not being about UFOs, et cetera, it's really, for me, disappointing because it makes the Pentagon look bad. And the Pentagon is, it's not a bad organization. These are people that are patriotic. They're experts in the work that they do, and they do their work selflessly day in and day out. And so when you have some sort of, if you will, disjointed communication inside the Pentagon, it's really a bad reflection on the entire Pentagon. And it's not really fair. It's not like there's this machine called the Pentagon that's out to get Lou Elizondo and out to get Harry Reid and out to get the ATIP program. It's just small pockets, I think, of resistance that we're seeing. And unfortunately, those pockets, you know, can still, I hate to say, gum up the works for the rest of the machine. But, you know, you have a car, an automobile, all it takes is a squeaky belt, and, you know, you've got problems. Now you've got to start looking at what's making that belt squeak. So it's not as bad as it was. I still have to be very, very cautious because, you know, again, I keep saying to people I still maintain an active security clearance. I know a lot of people think it's an excuse. A lot of people say, oh, well, you should, you know, forget about your NDA and your oath to the government, and you should just tell us everything that you know.
Yeah, and tell us really from prison.
Yeah, right. And really, my oath to the government is really my oath to the American people. What people don't realize is that oath I took, and others like Chris Mellon and Hal, it's not just an oath to this, you know, if you will, this giant machine called the U.S. government. It's really to the American people, it's to the taxpayers, because at the end of the day, that's who our allegiance is to. And so we take that oath very, very seriously. So anyways, there okay. You have it, George.
Bottom line,
it's gotten a little bit better. It's not fixed by any stretch, but we've come a long way in 3 years.
Let's jump into some current events. A story comes out from the debrief about pilot sightings of UFOs. You and I have talked about it publicly before, about these things that were going on the East Coast, where Navy pilots were flying out to a training area and seeing these strange objects daily, pretty much daily for an extended period of time. And then, as we have learned, there was an effort to get evidence, to collect photos or videos if possible. So we saw a story from the debrief about these efforts, and it was sort of teased that a photo was going to be coming out, and it was released and this photo of an object that looks kind of strange. And then a day or two later, another photo gets released of a Batman-type balloon that looks a lot like the object in the photo, and everyone has a good chuckle, and it is effectively debunked. Can you speak about what you know about that photo, and do you think the Navy pilot photographed a Batman balloon?
Well, that's a great question, George. Unfortunately, it's not as simple as just a yes or no. What you're talking about here is a photograph that was taken from inside a cockpit of an F-18 Super Hornet by a personal cellular device, someone's iPhone, if you will. But that wasn't the only one. And if you recall, for the last 3 years, I've been telling people, you know, we first talked about the Nimitz, and people said, well, that's in 2004. And I said, yeah, but there's more. And then, of course, it got revealed about the Roosevelt incidents in 2015. And people said, well, that's great, but that's, you know, that's still 2015. And I said, yeah, but that's not all. And here we have now, again, another one about very recently, this last year, about some more of these incidents. I think it's important that we don't look at each individual incident. I think we need to look at the trend. And what we have here going on, and it's continuing, by the way, to this day. This is not just, oh, look what happened last year. No, this is happening even this year. In fact, this is happening even the last few months. I'm not going to elaborate, but again, I don't think the audience should be surprised that these incidents are occurring with a high degree of frequency, enough where we are putting our taxpayer dollars to try to figure these things out. So in this particular case, if the object was a Batman balloon, then great, we figured it out. But there's other ones where we're definitely not dealing with the balloon. We're dealing with something that is far more technically advanced, frankly, than anything we have in our inventory. And again, I am confident that information will eventually come to light. I am not going to speculate right now what the government has or does not have in the way of evidence, because, again, as I've always told people since 2017, I am no longer employed by the U.S. government as a U.S. government representative on these matters. But the good news is that there are people who are. With the recent establishment of an actual UAP task force, right, by the Department of Defense, and now some proposed funding by Congress, you know, we can hopefully get to the bottom of this. Let's not forget, it's not just the United States that's dealing with this, right? We're talking about other countries as well. We just had Japan recently jump on board and say, hey, guess what? We want to work with you, America, about these UFO things, you know, because I think we may have the same problem. So I think people need to put this in the greater context that what we're seeing here is, you know, in the intelligence world, we used to have a little saying, and if something happens once, it's an anomaly. If something happens twice, it could be a coincidence. But if it happens three times, now you're looking at a trend. And what we see here, most importantly, is a definitive trend that there is something out there that we do not understand that has the capabilities to do things and perform in ways that we currently cannot. In this particular case, the quote-unquote Batman balloon that you're referring to, there's still some conjecture whether or not it is a balloon or not. I really am rather agnostic. I'll let the experts decide if it's a balloon or not. But I think we're missing the point. I think the fact that we're now actually able to have this conversation, that the government is taking this seriously, I think that is a breath of fresh air to this conversation. This is what we have been working for this entire time, and not just the last 3 years when I left the government, but for the entire decade that I was working this portfolio inside the government, and frankly, people that were working this portfolio before me. So this is a tremendous success. I don't look at this as an embarrassment at all. I look at this as a, you know, okay, here's a case where maybe we were able to provide an answer, a solution to a problem.
Well, as you said, there are other photos, and I don't know how high up, at what altitude a toy balloon can go, or how it can be photographed on a cell phone of a guy flying an F-18 at whatever the speed is. It seemed like that would be a tall task to catch a little toy balloon.
Well, let's face it, George, it hasn't been proven to be a balloon. I mean, there's some aspects to it where you can look and say, yeah, it vaguely resembles, you know, a, so to speak, a Batman balloon or, you know, some sort of odd balloon. But there's just as many people out there that say, no, actually, it's not. If you were to improve the quality of the photo.
I'll tell you what. Hold on, Lou. I'm sorry to interrupt you. We'll have to come back to that conversation. I want to ask you about a supposed triangle UFO photo that's floating around out there. We're talking with Lou Elizondo about his former job as head of ATIP. After he came forward, helped the New York Times break this blockbuster story, other news media around the world, around the country, started covering the UFO issue. It was somehow more respectable now that the New York Times had done it. That had a subsequent effect of making it acceptable for Congress to make inquiries. There were closed-door briefings for members of Congress. They've held many more briefings and have heard from multiple credible witnesses, including pilots. The U.S. Navy sort of led the way in making it easier for pilots to make these kinds of reports without worrying about having their flying privileges taken away because somebody might think they're crazy. A lot of things have happened as a result of Blue coming forward and that story. But you have to ask, where is the Air Force in this? Why don't we hear anything about them? They're the folks who ran Project Blue Book for all those years and supposedly are in charge of patrolling our skies and protecting us from things that come out of the sky, protecting our airspace. We're going to get into that with Lou Elizondo in a moment and also ask about this alleged photo that's floating around that supposedly shows a distinct triangular UFO right after it emerges from the ocean and flies away. Is that real? We'll see if Lou knows. We'll be right back. So Lou Elizondo, before the break, we're talking about this particular photo of a strange object photographed on a cell phone by an F-18 pilot. How is it that that photo is classified if the guy's using his personal cell phone?
Well, I think that's a great question, George. You know, people often ask, well, when you classify something, you're protecting sources and methods. And how is it that a commercial iPhone that you and I and anybody else can buy and use can be classified? It doesn't make sense. Well, if some in your audience remember, not too long ago, actually, there was a case, a pretty high-profile case, where there was a member of the United States Navy who happened to take his cell phone on board with him on board a nuclear submarine. I believe the individual was actually assigned duties on a nuclear submarine. And he took a picture of him inside the submarine. But it turned out that he was prosecuted. He was prosecuted because it wasn't that the phone itself was classified. It was the information contained in the photograph that was classified. The fact that he took a picture inside of a restricted area containing sensitive technology, that was problematic for the Navy and for the U.S. government. So it's a great question. People ask me all the time, how is it that a personal cell phone device could be considered classified? And it's really not. It's not the device itself. It's the data that is taken and the data that is contained within the photograph of that device that is classified, and that is that may very well be what the rationale that they're using regarding these particular photographs.
You've heard the story about the triangular UFO just emerging from the ocean. Supposedly there's a photo taken under similar circumstances by a Navy pilot, supposed to be very clear and dramatic. That story's been floating around. I'm not asking you this as somebody who might have classified information about it, but as a UFO investigator, you working on the TV series Unidentified and working with TTSA, have you made inquiries about that? Do you believe such a photo exists?
Yeah, put it simply, yes. I'm confident it is. You know, there's been some confusion within the government whether that photograph is real or whether or not that event even took place. I can tell you through, without giving away sources, of course, I've spoken to individuals who have access to specific classified systems, and they have absolutely and unequivocally expressed the validity of that photograph. In fact, it may actually be a video, and you know the photograph is simply a still from a longer video. Now, the question remains: why is it that if that is real, why are people acting very cagey within the government? I don't know. Maybe we have taken disclosure a little bit too far. Maybe we've rubbed up against something that's a little bit too sensitive that the U.S. government isn't prepared to have the conversation about right now. I don't really know. There's lots of different reasons. Could it be that only certain enclaves had access to this information while others didn't, and it's embarrassing now because, you know, obviously it looks like we're not talking to each other and to ourselves. There's a whole host of reasons. I don't want to speculate for you what those reasons could be because, you know, frankly, it could be all of the above or it could be none of the above. But to put it simply, yes, I am absolutely 100% confident that that is a very real event. But again, I would also emphasize, let's not just focus on that because these events are occurring continually. They're happening all the time. And if we run the risk like we did with the last time with the Nimitz and with the Roosevelt, if we focus on a single event or a single incident, then we begin to lose focus and we wind up focusing on the tree rather than the entire forest. And I think that's what's important. This is why I always encourage people, you know, look, it's interesting and anecdotal to look at a particular event. But what we're really interested in is the trend. We're looking at the similarities and congruencies of many events over a long period of time. And that's really the art of intelligence. Remember what I said, look at something once, it's an anomaly, twice, it could be a coincidence. We're really trying to focus on the trend. And as a reporter, right, you're an investigative reporter and frankly, a damn good one. You don't look at just one thing. You look at many, many different data points in order to develop a story, to vet that story, to corroborate that story. And so that would be my same advice to the audience. You know, let's keep an open mind and remember that you're only hearing about an event that the debrief publicized. But for every event that the debrief has publicized, and by the way, they did a really good job with it, there's a whole bunch of others that go below the radar, and most Americans have no idea. You know, there was a recent movie, George, called The Phenomenon, and I believe it was directed by James Fox and produced by a gentleman named Dan Farah. But if you want to just kind of get a brief historical snapshot of The Phenomenon, I would suggest, you know, take a quick look at that movie. You know, it's pretty compelling, and it kind of shows you through a temporal perspective, you know, a time perspective, that this is not just an incident that occurred, let's say, you know, over the Pacific Ocean near San Diego in 2004, or in this case, over the Atlantic Ocean in 2019. This has been occurring for a very long time, decades and decades. And we're finally at a point where we as a government are finally taking this seriously. And by the way, not just our government. We know other governments are too. So that would be my advice.
The U.S. Navy has really led the way, and, you know, that astonishing announcement more than a year ago saying we're going to change policy and make it easier for our pilots to report these things without worrying that we might stop them from flying or their career might be halted, something like that. I don't know if that policy was implemented, but I know that, you know, some pilots are cooperating. That for a while, what I was hearing was that these things were being seen off the East Coast every day as the Navy pilots would fly by it. So I imagine there are pilots who cooperate and some who aren't quite sure they want to get caught up in this still and are afraid of doing it. What I don't know is, where's the Air Force on this? Why is it just the Navy? Is it just we're not hearing about the Air Force, or are they're not going along with the program? What do you think?
Well, let me give you my personal perspective. I don't typically like to offer my opinion, because you know what people say about opinions. So, and I'm sure mine is probably no different. But I will share with you my thoughts on this, only because I asked the same question when I was in ATIP. Why is there this echo when we inquire about UAPs with the Air Force? And I've come to a personal belief that the Air Force has backed itself into a corner to some degree. The Air Force is expected by our country to be the very best in the sky, to have air dominance, and to protect our country from anything that's you know, within 2 inches above the ground up to you know, low Earth orbit and beyond. They own the airspace, and they're supposed to own the airspace. They spent a lot of time on Blue Book, and they said publicly that there's nothing to see here, folks. If it turns out that there really is something to see here, then people are going to start asking the Air Force some very difficult questions. And that is, okay, then first of all, why were you wrong before? And if you weren't wrong, then, you know, were you purposely making an excuse? Were you deceiving the American people? You know, today's Air Force is not yesterday's Air Force. 99.999% of the people in the Air Force are incredibly competent human beings. But like any other organization, bureaucracy tends to be the devil here. And the Air Force has a lot of bureaucracy, just like every other service. And unfortunately, the bureaucracy is composed of people who don't even necessarily have Air Force experience, not even military experience. A lot of these people are civilians or the special appointees, and they are by definition political appointees. Now, let's take that definition for a minute, political appointee. What does that mean? That means somebody who has been appointed in a position based upon either political affiliation or political service. They have been serving a politician, not necessarily a military leader. And so politicians make decisions usually based upon politics. And in this particular case, that may very well be the case with the Air Force. Maybe there was a lot of pressure in the past for the Air Force to have a reason. Can you imagine at the height of the Cold War, if the Air Force said, yeah, we don't know what these things are, how that would bode with the American people, especially the fact that, you know, we're toe-to-toe with the Russians, and they've got nuclear weapons, we've got nuclear weapons, and, you know, that probably wouldn't go over very well. I don't want to disparage the Air Force, because they are extremely competent. But the Air Force is no different than any other service that I've ever worked with. And unfortunately, bureaucracy and politics does have some play in what they do.
Let's talk about the UAP task force to the extent that you can. It's amazing that program exists, that it is acknowledged and on the record. It's giving briefings to members of Congress. I've been told different stories about how much personnel, how much budget that they've been waiting on this defense authorization bill to get passed. So they have some room to grow and expand. And can you give me your assessment of where they are, how it's going, and what the future holds for the task force? Are you encouraged?
Yeah, sure. First of all, the individuals that are currently assigned to the task force, I've had the honor and pleasure of serving with. I know most of them personally, and they are outstanding human beings. But look, I got to have this conversation by also saying I think we need to tamper our expectations. As I've said for the last 3 years, this is a process, not an event. And we're asking the U.S. government to engage in something that historically it never wanted to engage in the past publicly. And so to some degree, I think a lot of people have these false hopes that, you know, disclosure is here and all of a sudden we're gonna have this huge announcement by the U.S. government. It's a little bit, you know, it's Christmas season, right? So it's like telling someone they're going to get a Rolls Royce for Christmas. And, you know, really anything less than a Rolls Royce under the Christmas tree is going to be a disappointment. And when in reality, if people would just, I think, sit back a little bit and relax, take a breath, and maybe they would appreciate, you know, the Cadillac that they actually got under the tree a lot more. I think we need to give credit where credit is due. Now, could the task force be far more robust and be funded? Yes. But let's not forget Congress is trying to fund them. Let's not forget. Look, in 3 years, George, if you don't mind, I'd like to recap just very quickly how far we've come in 3 years. Because people always say, oh, you know, there's nothing new here, nothing that we haven't already known. But let's be fair here. In the last 3 years, you had three videos released that were on U.S. government systems. You had three videos confirmed to be authentic by the U.S. government. You have three videos that detect truly anomalous characteristics, as, by the way, admitted by the U.S. government. You have the U.S. government admitting that ATIP was real. You have the U.S. government admitting at various stages that ATIP studied UAPs. You have senior members of Congress acknowledging ATIP was real. You have classified, as you said, classified briefings being provided to key congressional members and their staff. You have the establishment of a UAP task force. You have military eyewitnesses coming out now in public, having the conversation. And you have other countries like Japan now wanting to share their UAP information with the United States. You have major media outlets now reporting on and taking seriously the UAP topic. And last but not least, let's not forget what happened this week. You had the former head of the CIA, the director himself, come out and say, yeah, these things are real. And oh, by the way, you know, America, you might want to prepare yourself that these things, they might not be from here. So in 3 years, George, we have come collectively very, very far. And I think people who don't recognize that probably suffer from a bit of amnesia. We've come light years, excuse the pun here, but we've come very, very far in 3 years, more so than we had perhaps in the last 70. The establishment of the task force is a monumental, if not a Herculean effort, and a success. You have the U.S. government saying, yes, UFOs are real, and we are establishing a task force to tackle this very problem. You have members of Congress coming out and saying, hey, we know these things are real, and by the way, they might not be from here either. So I can't imagine a time in history. Maybe I'm young, but I don't know a time when we've ever had this conversation before like this so openly, and the media is willing to report on it, and the American people are willing to have the conversation about this.
I'm right there with you. I never thought I would see this in my lifetime. It's just an amazing amount of progress made in 3 years. And again, I never thought I'd see it. There are challenges ahead, though. So the task force is plugging away. Once it gets fully funded, it can do its work. It has to report to Congress. And I can imagine that when Dave Fravor comes over to give a briefing to the Senate staff and then to elected members and then other pilots and people like yourself come over, that probably became a pretty hot ticket on Capitol Hill. What happens when all these members of Congress start getting briefings, when the UAP task force is up to speed and submitting reports on a regular basis? Do you have to worry about too many chefs in the kitchen? Do you have to worry about leaks coming from Congress?
Well, I wouldn't worry about leaks coming from Congress. Congress's job is to inform the American public about important things. If Congress tells the American people something, then it's probably for a good reason. I trust Congress to do its job. It's not perfect. You know, no organization is. But I will tell you, for example, folks like Marco Rubio, in this particular case, he's absolutely right. He wants to have the conversation. He wants to fund it. He says, look, I don't know what these things are. And the fact that we don't know what they are, and our best and our brightest in our government don't know what these are, we probably better figure it out. I think that's a very fair and rational way to look at this topic. And let's not forget that Harry Reid, more than a decade ago, and Senator Inouye and Stevens, they all felt the same way. They said, hey, look, we know these things are here. We're collecting them on our systems, and people are turning a blind eye. Now, here's where the problem arises, George, and I think it's a good point you make. There comes a time when a task force, by definition, is a temporary it's a temporary entity that is established for a very specific purpose. What we need here is not necessarily a task force. A task force is a great start. But what we need here is an enduring capability, something that's going to be around for a really long time, that's going to be fully funded, maybe under the construct of a Space Force, maybe under the construct of the Air Force or even the Navy, or maybe even under the Director of National Intelligence or even the Vice President, perhaps. We need to have an enduring capability that will look at this problem and put America's best and brightest, from academics and scientists and hard-nosed researchers. That's what we need here, I think.
I want to expand on that. We have to take a break. I want to expand on that, ask you about whether you'd go back if they established a program like that, whether you'd go back and work on it, and about the future of TTSA. A lot of stories floating around about To the Stars Academy and what's going on there. We're going to get into that and more with my guest, Lou Elizondo.